I almost think it's like the death of the stick a little bit for this generation, right? There's the carrot and there's the stick. The stick just doesn't work on this generation. At this, at the end of the day, they're just going to look at you and be like, I'm not going to participate or engage in that if that's the way it's going to be.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime professional recruiter, coach, and creator of the Chief of Staff Scaffold System. Let's get into it. Today, we're going to explore techniques to relate to your Gen Z workers as they become an increasingly large part of the workforce, yet have very different mindsets from many of us old people. So I have the CEO of St. Cloud Financial Credit Union, Jed Meyer, joining us. Welcome, Jed, and thanks for being here today. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, Carol, thanks for having me. It's great to talk with you again. Yes, as a CEO of St. Cloud Financial for the last 12 years, we're based in central Minnesota. We have about 88 employees today. When I started here about 12 years ago, we were about a fourth of our size and about half of the workforce. So this has been a big topic for us over the last 12 years and hiring the new workforce and going through all the changes that we've gone through over the last 12 years. And excited to talk to you about that today because I think we've learned some things that we've implemented that we would love to share with others.
Yeah. Real quick, when we had first talked, you shared that the institution is about 95 years old. Can you tell for those of us or those who do not know the difference between a bank and a credit union, what that is? Give us that distinction.
Yeah. Thank you for asking that question because I think that's interesting because it's been a question that gets asked and I've been in this industry for, you know, 27 years now. So, but basically very simple, right? A for-profit company basically takes all of their profits, runs their operations, and the profits go to a select group of individuals who own that company.
Yeah.
You have your nonprofit who ultimately take donations and then go out into their community and give back. And then you have one other business model. It's called a cooperative business model, a not-for-profit business model. And that's what credit unions are. And so the biggest difference here is that credit unions are owned by all of the people who utilize our services. So we have 28,000 members today. All of them own one share in our credit union. As the credit union makes profit, we take all of that profit and we can pay dividends to those members, but we also then can give it back to them in interest rates and other things and really drive down the price and the cost of them doing their financial business and to be an owner of the credit union. So we always say it's the best business model for democratically controlled capital in your local community as a credit union.
So why are there so many banks and not so many credit unions?
Yeah, actually, you know, let's clarify that because it's actually about equal.
Really?
You know,
not
right
where
now
I live, but
okay. Yeah. You know, from the banking perspective, obviously the big are all the large conglomerate banks. But when you start getting into the community banking space and credit union banks, really your local FIs.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've been dying for a long time. We consolidate both in the community banking space and the credit union space anywhere between 2 and 6% over the last 30 years. You know, there are 20,000 each of community banks and credit unions in the country in the 80s, and today we have about 4,500 community banks in the country and 4,500 credit unions left in the country. And so, and again, they're consolidating right now at about a 3.5 to 4% rate based on scale, really, and the fast change of technology. And I think it's a really important thing for the to get talked about a little bit more, the importance of that local FI and how it makes the local economy resilient and in such a important fabric of local economies. As the world becomes more connected, we really have to make sure that we don't allow community financial institutions to go away because that does hurt the local consumer and the local economy significantly.
So you're closing in on 90 employees. What would you say, or how many or what percentage of those are Gen Z?
Right now, I would say probably about 12% of those right now. So small for us. You know, we obviously in a professional setting, you know, we're a little bit different than some of the larger institutions. Larger institutions don't teach a lot of hard skills, so that opens up the workforce to them a little bit differently. And we're here at a smaller bank or small community, which is another plug for Gen Z and other generations to really want to work at a smaller institution. You know, you get access and hard skills, learning different things. I have multiple executives on my team. I include including myself, who have been at multi-billion dollar financial institutions at high executive levels, which are awesome. They're great. I think I had 160 people reporting to me before I came to a company that had 38 total. But the awesome part about this is that we get to build the culture. We get to grow with the company. And more for my executives who are at those levels who work for me, they actually get exposed to other portions of the organization as an executive. So if they want to be a CEO, they get to experience the income statement and balance sheet, even though you're the chief technology officer, where in a larger institution, you're not always exposed to those things.
How because Gen Z communicates so differently. and I know you have a really fantastic process around hiring and culture and so on and so forth, which I applaud. But how do you really determine and how, you know, and especially for your leaders that have to manage those people?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to remember is always in generations and studying generations. You know, I used to actually do some speaking on this about 15 years ago, and I'll stick with a part of that speech, which is, you know, every generation we all try to, you know, overgeneralize. The world tries to overgeneralize, right? And I know when I was coming up, I'm like, well, I'm not like every other Gen Xer, right? So don't quit saying that about me. It bothered me when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I think it does that for every generation to say, hey, we're all different. We're all unique. But there are some different overgeneralizations that are true as well. And I think the biggest one for this group and this generation is, you know, when we came into the workforce, at least from my experience, it was kind of like if you got an attaboy or attagirl within 2 years, you were really killing it.
Yeah.
It was awesome, right? Like, come on in, keep your head down, be reliable, be responsible, do a good job. And then eventually they'll notice and you'll be able to continue to move forward. Today, that's not the workforce, right? There's a lot of different ways that they are raised in the school systems with different award systems and different ways of learning. So I almost think it's like the death of the stick a little bit for this generation, right? There's the carrot and there's the stick. Mm-hmm. The stick just doesn't work on this generation.
Right.
At the end of the day, they're just going to look at you and be like, I'm not going to participate or engage in that if that's the way it's going to be, which is very different and very unique. And it's why our workforce isn't as, you know, we don't have as many Gen Zers to pick from because some of them are like, well, I'm just going to kind of go do maybe a different job on the side. And I'm not really looking for the career where, you know, they take away, you know, a lot of them live through that 08, 09, 2010 time where they saw their parents who had put 30 years of loyalty into an institution and watched the institution just walk away from them.
Right.
So do you really blame them for that? No, at the same time, Gen Z has to be able to assimilate to the workforce as well, right? Like there is a little bit of, sometimes I think I meet with a Gen Zer who has a really high acumen, high potential. And in their mind, their job and my job is just a matter of circumstance. And so there's a little bit of assimilating that they have to come back of saying, no, there's actually about 27 years of a lot of work and experience and tough times and wisdom that came through that, right? Like you probably can do this job, but you're going to want to go through some experiences. So you got to balance that. But really the biggest thing that we've done from a strategic perspective is we have a rule here. If we cannot understand that our side of the street is covered first, we don't get to allow my executives or any other leader to look at the employee's side of the street. And what do I mean by that? We have a coaching wheel here, and I'll give credit to Bob Terrio. He was a coach way back in like 2005. Mm-hmm. It was from a presentation. I don't know if it was his or not, but he presented at one point at a leadership seminar. I was at a coaching wheel and really talking about clarity being number one, right? If high talented people don't know what they're supposed to do, is that really fair that you can hold them accountable to something they don't have clarity on? So you have to ensure clarity. He always said at that point, if you ever have to reiterate the same expectations, remember you're leading adults, right? Like this is not leading, you know, a five-year-old soccer team. You shouldn't have to repeat yourself all that often. And when you do, be consciously aware of that, right? Because if you have to reiterate expectations to a high talented person, something's missing from the accountability or measurement perspective, right? And so clarity is number one. Then you move into the how bucket, which is, do they have the ability, support, and leadership above them and organizational resources to do their job? And that's really where the leader comes in of when we say our side of the street. So if someone comes to me and says, hey, this employee is not performing, my first question is, what are you doing about it specifically with examples, right? So we want to cover our side of the street first and really give them that loyalty back to say, hey, at the end of the day, we're here with you. we will have some expectations potentially for you and a change of behavior over time, but we're here to support you. This is how we're going to do it. So you have to increase the clarity of your communication with this generation to a certain degree. You have to get really far out on a vision with them a little bit further than maybe you did with someone like myself at Gen Xers, and really kind of paint the future of like, hey, if you put the effort and the work and kind of go through some of the valleys that every job has, there's never been a job I've had that I've loved 100% of it, including this job, unfortunately, right? But at the end of the day, the whole point in doing something you love is, you know, you got to love climbing the mountain. You got to love the ride down the other side. And that experience has to be worth it to go through the valley until you get to the next mountain. And that's really ultimately about where I see happiness in jobs. And so covering our side of the street, making sure that we've done what we can. So I'll give you a unique example. So if a teller's having struggle balancing, right, we would say, hey, let's clarify that they know they need to balance their drawer every day. And I know this is a little sarcastic in a little way of saying, yeah, of course they know they have to balance, but we have to ensure that they know this is the goal, right? Do they know how to do that? Have you tell, show, do as a leader, right? Have you told them how to do it? Have you showed them how to do it? Have you observed them doing it? Have you implemented strategies like balancing more often throughout the day so you can find their mistakes a little bit earlier? What have we done to cover our side of the street? And that's the one side of the coaching wheel. So you got clarity, and do, and have we fulfilled our job to make sure they have the resources, tools, and knowledge to do what they do? And then you can go to the other side of the coaching wheel, which is they can't do it or they won't do it, right? And can't is aptitude, and maybe it's just wrong seat of the bus. So right fit, wrong job, let's get them on a different seat of the bus. Won't do it is attitude. And at that end of the day, that's usually when we're at a point of saying, hey, we're okay to separate ways. But my team has to go through that litmus test before they start going through any disciplinary or constructive feedback to our employees. And we don't have a performance improvement plan. We have retention plans here. You know, at the end of the day, you know, the old adage of like, well, we got a bad employee, so we're just going to document it. So we cover our own butt before we let them go. Of course, you have to run a business and you have to be smart, but you also have to have the right intent. And that is, we want to retain the employee if they want to be retained and do the job that we're asking them to do. So if we're on that same page, we'll stick with you as long as we can. And that seems to resonate a little bit with these Gen Zers.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because I've seen multitudes of videos of people getting laid off, and you know, it's been written in Business Insider or wherever, and they say, you know, they never even really told me what my job responsibilities were. So, you know, although you're using this term clarity, I use effective communication and understanding and being, I mean, super clear about what is expected of a person within any particular position, right? And so often what's missed, and I used to find this out when I was still a full-time headhunter, right? Where I would sit down with the stakeholders and run a kickoff meeting, 40, 50 questions to determine what I was going to write up in the position description. And there was never a time where somebody didn't say on any number of questions, oh, that's a really good question. I never thought about that. And if it's living in a blind spot for you, you can't possibly communicate that as part of what you need in the job. You can't build a competency model effectively without it, right? Which then gets used not only for hiring, but for performance reviews when you have them, as often as you have them. And it's really, I think what's missing in most companies is that people don't really know what the specific measurable results are of their job.
Yep. 100%.
And without those, you cannot do your job effectively. And to your point, our side of the street, who's responsible for that? Who has to be accountable for that? Leadership does. Right? And, Gen Z communicates in a different way than you and I do, I think. I mean, you know, my chief of staff is... she's actually a millennial, but she's like 2 years from Gen Z. She, you know, kind of refers to herself on the cusp of both. And that's kind of where I am. I'm on the cusp of boomers and X.
Yep.
And, you know, she grew up with technology. There's stuff that she can do so fast that if I even thought about doing it, it would cause me brain damage, or it would not get done, or it would not get done well, or it would take exponentially longer to do, and which costs time and money, right?
Yep.
And but we had to initially, when I hired her 3 years ago, you know, I had to say to her, what's going to work the best for you for us to communicate? And that actually changed pretty quick, because what we realized was, whether it's, you know, emails or texts, that is not going to work for me, for the mere simple fact that, you know, over 50% of people misinterpret or misunderstand the written word. People are in a hurry. There's no emotion involved, you know, and now we perpetually send voice memos. Now, when she blows up my phone too much, she knows that it just overwhelms me. And then we have a call, yep. Right?
Yep.
You know, we have a weekly call. Yeah. And then if we have to have other calls during the week, which we do from time to time, sometimes they're just 10 minutes long, we have those. And I think what so many people are missing with Gen Z in particular is looking at them and saying to them, how do you best communicate? And let's make yep. sure that this works out for us, so it works for both of us. It can't just be what works for you. It has to also be what works for me. So let's find that middle ground that we can both be happy with.
Yep. Here's one of the best things about Gen Z that I think they're going to do for yeah. the workforce as we move forward is they are very, maybe stubborn is not the right word, but stubborn from the perspective of you can't just give lip service to values and beliefs. At the end of the day, they want to work for a place that not only lives them and doesn't just slap a value or belief on top yeah. of a profit metric, mm-hmm. right? That it actually has to be there, and then they will give you everything they have, right? So Gen Z, catch them doing it right more often than giving them constructive feedback, right? You have to pick your points for when and pick your battles, and mm-hmm. you have to catch them right doing it right more often. And so you have to have strategies around that, right? So, you know, I know we have a little bit of a gamification within our mm-hmm. branch network. You know, it can get pretty mundane and pretty repetitive.
Sure,
and so
yeah, right.
They do some gamification because that generation likes the gamification yeah. of, you know, just having fun little contests or things happening in the branch while they're doing their mm-hmm. job, right? Making it more of an experience than just ultimately, you should be as important. You should care as much about profit generation as I do.
Right.
Because then you benefit. Like, that argument doesn't go as far with Gen Z as it did for us back in those days, because at the end of the day, they again watch their parents lose everything mm-hmm. they did for years and years and years. And so you have to lean into it. You have to make sure that you're creating an experience, and you have to display your values at a depth that actually has some level of authenticity to it. I think the old squeeze the sponge efficiency models that we heard in the 90s of all the books that are written and all those things just is not going to work with this generation. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I want to run an inefficient business, but it becomes less of a goal to say, no, I want to run a high culture business mm-hmm. that people love to come to work mm-hmm. for. And then we'll create the volume, create the actions, and then I'll look at the efficiency on the other right. side of it, because I don't get the luxury of saying, hey, I have something that you are begging for, which is a mm-hmm. job. It's fascinating to say that, because obviously nobody likes unemployment. We know how the state of the world is, but this generation just is not willing to sacrifice the rest of their
yeah.
journey of their life for money. And mm-hmm. it's very different than it was when you and I grew up. And mm-hmm. I think recognizing that and putting strategies around that is really important. Here's another thing I think we did really, really well, Carol. We give room. And what I mean by that is that if you want the greatness from somebody, you got to give them room and show up for them. The most important mm-hmm. time to show up for them is when they're not at their best.
That's right.
Right. Especially goes really far for this Gen Z generation of saying, you remember that loyalty thing that you don't think I actually care about because you watched what happened to your parents when their company told them they cared about it? When you show up for them when they're not at their best and it's just another day mm-hmm. to say, hey, we all have those days. I'll take, this is just a valley for you. I love the mountains that you create for this organization. This isn't going to change how I think about you, how the organization thinks about you. Let's work through that. Mm-hmm. There are going to be very specific expectations to change whatever we are to be in this valley so you can get to the other side.
Yeah.
But we're with you through that. And when you show up for them when they're not at their best, it's super impactful today mm-hmm. where I don't know that we always slowed down in the late 90s, early 2000s to show up for someone when they weren't at their best. We basically just said, you're hurting us, therefore you're expendable, versus saying, no, I actually love it when I get you at your best. Like the old sports analogy, right? Would you have the most elite athlete or the guy who's really, really good, or the lady who's really, really good, and they're like lunch pail? They just show up. They have the mm-hmm. best attitude. They're a great team player. I'll take that person every day of the week
yeah.
And twice on Sundays than I will the elite talent who doesn't really care about what we mm-hmm. do.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point. You know, as I'm listening to you, it kind of makes me think back, especially when you talk about culture. And I've talked about this ad nauseum, right? Not every culture works for every company. It depends on the company. I mean, are you B2C, B2B? It's all very, very different. And, you know, you're in a B2C business, right? Mm-hmm. Even though your consumer is a shareholder, right?
Yep.
And, you know, I think back to how the accolades that Tony Hsieh got when he created Zappos.
Yep.
And, you know, wrote a book and everybody's like, oh, now we need to copy off that. And I would say, no, you don't. That worked for Zappos. It's not going to work for Oracle.
Yeah.
You know, it's a totally different culture. They're selling totally different. It's, you know, it just depends. And I think the point here, especially when, you know, as we're talking about Gen Z, is to ask people what they need, what they want. And that doesn't mean they're going to get everything they want. you have to make that clear.
The fact that you ask shows you care.
Well,
and then if you implement something around that,
if you do that authentically, yes, it does.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, and as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, you know, just if whoever is, you know, the team lead or the manager for your tellers, for example, right? If that person is paying attention and noticing facial expressions and how somebody is when they come in for the day, to just say, hey, do you have just a couple of minutes before when you take a break, let's, you know, can I talk to you real quick? Just, you know, nothing big, whatever. You know, it kind of strikes me that you're not having a great day today or that something might be off. Can I help you? Is there anything I can do for you? You know, it doesn't really take that long to care about somebody.
No, and honestly, I love that statement. Let's say that again, right? It does not take a lot of effort or time to care about someone or show them that. And and I think the importance and the value of that has significantly risen in the state of leadership in today's world.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I tell our staff that all the time, our executives, our leaders, we talk about that and we build placeholders, right? So you can't just say these things on podcasts. You have to then step back, write That's a strategy, right. And then ultimately go out, execute, and then sharpen that strategy, right? And so at the end of the day, we have a concept we're talking about here. What does it look like in real life? How does it work? What works well? What doesn't work well? Involve them in the process. We have the Real You team here that we created. It used to be called our Uncommon Culture team. It's a biannual team. Anybody can be on it, from the CEO to a teller. They have an equal voice. I, as the CEO, told that team, I will fund you. Your number one job is to make this the best place to bank and the best place to work.
Yeah.
And I want it to be meaningful. And so the Real You team, so I think they just had a self-defense class that they brought somebody in for.
Nice.
To CPR class, to financial investment planning, to, you know, whatever it is, but you have to build structure around it so that it is maintain it, and it actually is something that you can sustain over a period of time and then ultimately build on. And so I think sometimes when we get into the care, we surface level it, right? As people who run businesses, right? We all are accountable to the bottom line. I'm not different in a not-for-profit. I still have to run. Nobody's hiring me to manage their money to lose their money.
Right, of course.
Right? Like our members don't want me to lose their money. They just want maximum value back off that. Well, what does that actually mean? It means they come in and I want to operate on the smallest margins possible, because that means I'm implementing the maximum value back to 28,000 people who own my credit union, whether that's through the community or directly in an interest rate to them. And so I think the time and value of care, just simple care. And when I have these conversations with other leaders, oftentimes it's fascinating, because they say, hey, we're doing the same things you are. So can you really now tell me how you're being successful? You know, we're in a company, we're going to approach 5X, a 96-year-old company. By the time we're 96 years, I've been here for 12 and a half years, we'll 5X this company without a sales strategy, right? We don't have sales goals. We don't pay commission here. It's not how we operate. We find people who believe what we believe, and we give them room to run, and we give them freedom within a framework. And that framework is the directionality of running the business. But there's room in there for the human being. And that really ultimately usually gets a lot out of them as we continue to move forward. And so I think that's a secret to the success. You have to create a different culture for your people. You have to see them. You know, when these other CEOs ask me all the time, like, we're doing that, I had to come up with a saying, because I didn't know how to say. I'm like, yes, I know you're in the community, but I'm just in the community differently, with a different purpose and a different reason. You're going into the community to do a good work. No, I love it. I keep doing it. I love it. But your goal is some sort of ROI based on that action. Mm-hmm. And you typically in a for-profit company, that ROI has a short-term element to it, right? So yes. I'm going to go into the community and I'm going to expect some sort of short-term ROI. Here we measure long-term ROI, right? If it's the right, there's never the right, was Martin Luther King, right? There's never the perfect time actually with it being money. Yeah. There's yeah. never the wrong time to do the right thing. Right. And we believe over time, if we inspire people and they get to feel what we say, why wouldn't they want to bank with us in the end and become an owner? And that's how we've mm-hmm. ultimately grown this company over time. So the saying I came up with for those executives was, here's the deal, guys. We're different by degree. With greater depth, with greater frequency, and greater authenticity in everything that we do. So mm-hmm. yes, you're right. You're doing the same thing we are. We're just doing it a little bit deeper, a little bit more meaningful, and a little bit more frequently, mm-hmm. and displaying more authenticity as a specific goal outside of the ROI financial metrics that we're looking for. And ultimately, that different by degree is significantly profound to the consumer. I wish it wasn't. I wish our strategy wasn't so simple, Carol, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're growing. We have been slowing down growth for 7 years because of how we're built, because people want to bank here. Mm-hmm. And that's a fun place to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is, as we talked to you, I don't think you gave the specific numbers in our first conversation. You know, within the first 10 years you were with them, you went from 10,000 to 28,000 members.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And, you know, I think to myself, oh, God, changing banks, whatever it is, it's such a hassle, you know. And the fact that that many people are doing that says something.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, 100%. So, it's a pain. It's very difficult to do that.
I hate doing that. And I hope not to have to do it again anytime soon.
The big part about that is actually, fortunately, some of our competitors make that a little bit easier. So we oftentimes tell our salespeople, hey, you don't have to get someone's checking account today, because we're not trying to sell products here. We're trying to partner with people to help them meet their financial goals. Here's the deal. Continue to do what's in their best interest. Give them the interest. Mm-hmm. Ask for the business, because I'm like every other for-profit business. I want all of my members to do all their business with me. Why is that? A cooperative. Participation is the fuel that makes our financials grow,
of
right?
Course.
The more our members participate with us, the more money I make, the more money I can give back
That's
to
right.
them. And so we do want them to do all their business with us, but how we obtain that is very different. And so we tell our sales staff, you don't have to get the account today. At the end of the day, just be top of mind when that other institution makes them mad and doesn't follow through on the way we're talking. Mm-hmm. And then the key is, if you get them to come here for any reason, price, convenience, or you've been working on them for a while and they finally had enough time to grow through the hassle of changing, mm-hmm. now it's about making them feel what we
That's
said.
Right.
And the minute you do that, we have somebody that's a champion of our organization, and word of mouth spreads, and that's how we've been able to grow our credit union.
You know, and what's really interesting about that is that, you know, I talk to CEOs every single day. And, you know, when you and I first spoke, I thought, God, you have such a, it's so rare that I hear your refreshing viewpoint on leadership, right? Because most of the time CEOs just, you know, are blowing sunshine up your skirt.
Yeah.
And they, you know, when the rubber meets the road, they are not practicing what they are preaching. Okay. And I still find it exceedingly rare for CEOs to be this way. I mean, believe me, it's not that I don't see them. I do. But I sometimes I just have to think, what in the world are they missing? Like
vulnerability. It's vulnerability, Carol.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, because
I think you're right. I mean, I've talked about vulnerability. We talk about that a lot. I've written mm-hmm. about it. How the importance of a CEO being vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Or any leader for that matter,
well,
right? Every leadership
book,
no matter when you've read it, whatever genre or decade it was in, selfless leadership, and every leadership book is always in there, right? You have to be selfless, right?
Yeah.
Well, most leaders are selfless enough to be a good leader. Are you really selfless enough to be so vulnerable that you've given away the keys to the car like you do with your 16-year-old and you actually have to let them go drive? And actually leave for a weekend and not come back and not check on them every day. And right. It's a little bit of that, to be honest with you, because, but what you find in the end of that is most people wake up in the morning and it's like, I want to have a good day today.
That's right.
Every one of you people that work for you, everybody that reports to you, they all wake up that way. What's the difference between that and going home mad at the end of the day? You got some influence there. And do you give them the opportunity and room to have a great day today, to make some mistakes and not have it be a major issue, to go great, gain some success and not ride too high and have it be about their ego, but really more about the outcome, right? Because if we can keep focusing on the outcomes, we'll be successful. But most leaders that I've seen or experienced over time, they're vulnerable just enough where it benefits them. They don't like to allow them to, it's self-protecting to a certain degree, right? Because when you let go that much, I have plenty of people on my teams that can make a decision today that will get me fired, that I will have no influence. I have influence on it, but I don't have control. Mm-hmm. And that's a scary thing to say out loud, even on this podcast. But at the end of the day, I get the greatness because of that, and I trust them. And you have to get, it takes time to get there. It's not like I give everybody full 100%. No. You can write a $1 million check on your first day on the job. But over time, we build this over time, and that really is where you get the advantage. And when you are able to be vulnerable enough, I just get to come tell you about this stuff. So this isn't just me. This is our organization. This is our culture. I'm a part of it. I'm not, I might be the leader of it. I might have helped create it, but it's become something well beyond me. And at the end of the day, we get to facilitate. So I get to come talk about it, because when you do that and you accomplish it, our return from our employees that are fully engaged and talented, that are allowed to make some mistakes, is 10x what I could do on my own, protecting myself by not being very vulnerable. And there's that kind of that over the hump. Once you get over that hump, you realize that. And we're spending time and money on external coaches for my executive team, because a lot of them are in that stage of the career. They're just getting over the hump of, what does it really mean to let go a little bit more, to have more? I think I saw in a post that you had recently talking a little bit about from an organization perspective, your executives need to have more passion around the organizational goals and not just their personal goals, and protect their own territory, I think, is one thing you were talking about and something I read of you recently. And I think that's spot on. I think that's spot on. We got to get to a place where the organization trumps all. We say this: highest level of accountability in your primary accountability, but the understanding that greatness can only come through collaboration. So we got to know that you got it. We got to know that you own your thing. Do not come in here and ask people how to run your area like it's a collaborative. Come in. This is my plan. This is my recommendation. Have enough skin to let them beat it up. We know when we can beat up each other's plans and make them smarter and we don't take it personally, we're all sharper because of it. And if you can do that, you'll get to greatness collaboration, right? You have that the high level of individual accountability with a collaborative spirit, but you got to start with the individual, because this is not just a collaborative institution. My CFO has very specific things he has to do himself, and nobody else is empowered to do those things.
Right.
That's why he has the job and what he needs to do. I need to know he has that, but then I also need to know that he's going to be vulnerable enough to come in with ideas and let the rest of his peers beat it up on behalf of the organization.
Jed, if you kind of look out in 6 to 12 months from now, where you're looking to get, what would you say, if there is anything, is your biggest bottleneck to growth?
Well, in credit unions, it's the ability to obtain capital, right? So I can only grow capital but through my way. So when I talk, or but through my members, right? And so when I talk to you about those small margins, right? So that's the biggest hindrance for us, is that we could grow faster, but the denominator of growth erodes our net worth because we have too much success, because we don't make as much money on a return on our investments, or return on our assets, I should say, as fast as maybe some people who charge larger fees. And so that's always our biggest mentality from a growth perspective. Some fun things I think we're going to be trying. We're going to be looking at shift differentials this year. We're going to be looking at employees, they have the ability to pay themselves at any time by clicking a button in our new software that's coming out. We're looking at potentially creating positive employees to see if they, they get to pick their schedule. That strategy is just in the infancy. Maybe we never do anything, but I love that a team's out there trying to think of, like, could we build something where we have a shift differential and we have the ability, and we say, you get to pick your shift.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to work a Saturday, go in there. But you want to make a shift differential and make a little more money, pick that Saturday shift, and try to get to a place where that Gen Z, that millennial, are a little bit more in control, like they want to be of their own lives, and try to lean into it a little bit more, right? Leaning into it is one of the best strategies any CEO can do. When we're faced with a challenge or problem, I always tell my staff, stop reacting. Let's see if there's a way to lean into this.
Yeah.
Because we might be able to both swim downstream rather than trying to swim upstream. Let's see if we can accomplish both.
So. You know, I love the idea of letting people pick their own schedule. And of course, when everybody decides they don't want to work on Saturday, you know, then you sit down and say, okay, now how do we solve this problem as a team?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and shift different channels. Well, we've had to solve that forever, right? We've been open Saturdays, and in banking, I'll tell you, it's been kind of frustrating and leading, you know, branch networks of like, you know, a lot of my people I've led throughout my career, sometimes they'll get into a mode where they're hiring 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. I'm like, you realize we're kind of more of a 8 to 6 and Saturday place, right? Like we can't staff Saturdays last because that's actually one of the busiest days our members want to come see us. Yeah. Right. So shift differentiator, but you just, to your point, when you ask that question, when talented people ask themselves the right question, you always come up with an answer. So you know how we've solved that in the past? Mm. We have plenty of single parents that work here who love working on Saturdays because they come in for 3 hours.
Right.
They don't have to get any daycare. They get a full day off during the week when they can do laundries, doctor's appointments, appointments, some of those things. To the semi-retired couple who has a lake home in northern Minnesota, you mean I can just work a couple hours on Saturday morning, not fight the traffic on my way up to my lake home, and I don't have to come back until Tuesday morning? That sounds great for me. So you have to just look and say, hey, can we just start with what other people need and try to back that into what we need rather than trying to force the people who have already told us they don't want to do what we're asking them to do and figure out where the solution is. It's there. We just have to work for it.
Right. Well, and it's the same thing, but, you know, with these larger companies and, of course, you know, Facebook and Jamie Dimon come to mind immediately. Oh, that's it. As of, you know, this date, everybody's back in the office. You know what? Guess what's going to happen with many of your people, particularly your Gen Z people. They're going to give you the bird and say and think, well, okay, I'll start looking for a new job. Jed, is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to talk about?
No, I don't think so. I think just always remember every generation thing I think I've learned is they all have value. They are all different. They all want to own homes and do some different things. There's different idiosyncrasies, but I think it's important that we still keep that individual human focus on how we treat human beings. Like, you know, everybody that sits in front of me is different. You know, even asking, when people we have, well, obviously in Minnesota, we know there's some unrest right now. And, you know, when my staff asks me, I always say, hey, I have 2 chairs in my office. And when I run this company, I look at these 2 chairs all the time. And you know what my mind says? The member in this chair loves what I'm about to say. And the member in that chair absolutely hates what I'm going to say. And I have to be able to have an answer for both. And at the end of the day, that's our job. We focus on human beings and partnering with them and their financial success. We're not political. We're not any of those things. Mm-hmm. We are here to help people achieve their dreams with a financial plan and a partner they can trust that's not just trying to gain profit from them. And that's why I love looking forward to monies and love working at a credit union.
Jed Meyer, CEO of St. Cloud Financial Credit Union. This has been a fun conversation. Thanks so much for joining me.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me, Carol. It's always great to talk with you.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.